Welcome back to the Financial Beast Podcast. I am your BFFF. That means your best financial friend forever. And of course, this is the where we talk about showing practice owners how to harness the power of their practice, build wealth, and go out at the top of their game. And I'm very happy to have a return guest back to the podcast. And that return guest, of course, is Mr. Michael Nula.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric.
Of Nula Training Systems. And I'm bringing him on here, number one, because he has a very, deep background in the topic that we're going to talk about today. And quite frankly, he is one of the most successful practice owners that I've ever met. And he's got a very unique viewpoint. And I think we're going to really just dig into this topic of profit and practice profits as we go along. But Michael, as usual, thank you very much for being on the show with me today.
Thank you, Eric. Good to be here.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just get into it. Practice profits. You were a practice owner for a long, long time. And we both right now work one-on-one with clients that are healthcare owners, right? And the topic of profit obviously comes up a lot because you're running a business and you have to have an eye on the profitability of the practice. If you don't, then a lot of really negative things happen. So, you know, without going too much into like your history of running a practice, when did you first realize the importance of profit or paying attention to it when you were running your, healthcare practice? Do you remember that? Yeah. Remember that day?
I do. Yeah. Okay. Even though it was, you know, 20 years of running my own practice, right. And growing it from nothing to 15 locations. It was in the first year, you know, it's running a payroll and realizing, oh, wow, need to make sure that I have enough to float payroll, right? Mm. And the first time you feel that little pinch, when you have a few team members, that's usually the moment where you feel it. And for me, it was at the end of year one. You know, happened to be one of those perfect storms that as practice owners, we may experience at a time or another when there's a lapse in payment from insurance carriers, coupled with maybe, a month where production's down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if you're running things rather tightly, like many of us are,
yep.
You get that moment where you're looking at a payroll that's scheduled and you're feeling this pressure, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, for me, it was in that moment. By the end of the first year, I realized, clearly the different hats we wear as a practice owner. And there's that one as that owner investor where you realize like this thing needs to also generate a surplus, for a variety of ways. So we'll probably get into that.
I love that. Generating a surplus. Because yeah. I think that's and I get it. Most healthcare practitioners got into the ownership phase because obviously you wanted to be able to run your own ship. You wanted to practice how you wanted to practice. There was a business element of this that, of course, they did not teach you in medical school. They didn't teach you at all. And this was the learning curve that a lot of practice owners had to like overcome was like understanding the income and expense part of running a practice and exactly what that means. And, you know, what is a profit? How much should my profit be? Right. Where does it come from? How do I calculate it? Is it enough? What do I do with it? You know, all these questions, I think, you know, come up as you go along your journey of really understanding that role as an owner investor.
Yeah. And we tend to fall into it, right? We usually start this venture, thinking like really with our clinical hat, right? Whether we're doctors or physical therapy, whatever our specialty is in private practice, you come in with that clinician hat, kind of really zeroing in on the way you want to roll, the way you want to flow, the treatment philosophy, the approach, the style. And then as you get rolling along, you realize like, oh, okay, I have this owner hat that I wear too, where I have to balance revenue and expenses, yep. And then generating surplus. And then you have that executive hat where we need to be thinking about planning and strategy. And when we layer in some staff members, what is the implication on the business? And oh, wait a minute, I have an organization here. So have to organize things periodically and consistently and start thinking about routines, right? And habits and systems and processes. So, but it's, you know, that in itself is a process, right?
When you say generating surplus, like describe how important that is to have a surplus.
Yeah. Well, so I guess it depends on what type of person you are. I'm a foodie. I like to eat. Mm-hmm. I like to have a little dessert after. So it's a little pie, you know, you go and you there's an exchange there where, you know, you get a meal and it's full, but you want something at the end. And that's the pie, that's surplus. And it's something to not feel bad about. There's a great and a right way to balance all of that. But, that's essentially what you're trying to do in business,
mm-hmm.
you know, is leave a little bit room, you know, for some surplus. And then that surplus can fuel, a lot of things, right? I don't know how specific you want to get today, but, you know, speaking in generalities, you know, certainly want to put some aside first to pay yourself as an owner, mm-hmm. because you're working hard, you're sacrificing, and you deserve to get paid. You want to put some aside for a reserve fund, you mm-hmm. know, so that you can pay your bills, when you're met with duress times or hiccups or whatever. Then earmark a little bit for growth and development when it's time to update computers and put new paint on the walls, get new equipment.
Yep.
And then perhaps have a little bit earmarked for kind of a rainy day fund when kind of sometimes you need emergency money.
When the snow hits in the Northeast, you're not going to be seeing patients that day, right?
Yes, for your consequential things, right? So, extenuating circumstances, et cetera. And that's maybe at the simplicity, of course, you're the expert with organizing that. But that's a little bit of the mindset that goes into why surplus, you know?
You know, I think that's so important because a lot of owners have this negative connotation with profit, or at least feel somewhat bad if there's a profit. And I don't think they quite understand just how necessary it is if you want to have, number one, a good like household experience with, you know, money and finances and such, and you want to have a business that has the opportunity to grow and expand. There's no way you can do that if you don't have a profit left over. And I think a lot of people think that, oh my gosh, these owners are making so much money, but they don't really realize that a lot of that profit goes back into the business, goes into reserves, goes to pay taxes, you know, for the practice, you know, for the practice owner, because you guys take the liability. So, you know, the way that we look at profit, and I think you really described it really, really well, you know, it's designed for these different segments, right? And it's not just this big lump sum that goes to this greedy owner that then just spends it on, you know, boats and Lamborghinis.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's playing that balance too. Realize, you know, it doesn't mean you have to spend all of the surplus either and reinvesting it in your company, mm-hmm. right? You know, get what you need, you know, so that you can continue to grow and reinforce the great service that you're delivering to your community. Pay your people well, you know, have a nice modern facility where you're keeping up with the times.
Yes.
And then again, that you're insulated for life, because things do happen in business. And just as they do in life, it's all connected, right? We're up, we're down, but what's down doesn't stay down long. It does go back up, and what goes up sometimes comes down. But the idea is how do you make that oscillation a little tighter, so it's mm-hmm. not quite too roller coastery that makes people ill, right? So
let's talk about numbers. What would be a minimum target that you would have for profit margin then? And we'll just take a healthcare practice, and you know, I know your background's in physical therapy. So, like, what was the target that you had as far as what a target profit would be?
Sure. Like, ideally, you know, a healthy baseline target would be 8 to 10%, preferably 10%. I like to think that's a good baseline, mm-hmm. you know. But then, you know, if you want to start talking about optimal, it'd be great if you can be moving towards a 15 to 20%. That's going to take a lot of more work and planning and efficiency, and consistency and productivity, balancing productivity with, you know, something that is sustainable for the group. You don't want to overburn your workforce. It's like you're balancing, you know, how can we remain productive where we're not getting tired, but we're also not having, you know, gaping holes in our schedule when we could be serving our community, right?
Yep.
So, but that's, you know, I think 10% is, that's a good baseline range. That's sort of, then you can organize things like we were saying earlier. It creates some streams, right? So you can begin to put some systems in place to automate that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be based on percentages, as you know. It could be just a monetary amount that you name, you know, say annually, so based on the size of your practice, I want to allocate X amount towards, you know, the tax fund, like you said, and then growth fund, reserve fund, just to name a few things. And then you have a systematic way of, you know, accessing that without a drum roll waiting to see what revenue looks like in a month. And then that way you can focus on the things that energize you, which is delivering the great care and service to your community, engaging and collaborating with your team members, getting out there and doing nice outreach in your communities, make your practice well known, but also manage those wonderful relationships that makes this whole thing go round and round, right?
I like that. I'm going to talk about a little bit about a myth of how to ensure that you have profits, because I'm sure you've had those days where, you know, you had a really productive month. You look at your profit and loss statement, it says that you made all this profit, and then you go to your bank accounts and you're like, where the heck is the money at? Right. And I think every practice owner has had one of those days. And I think one of the things that you have to understand when it comes to your profits is that it's dangerous just to kind of think that they're just going to appear at the end of the month, like they're just going to be there. Right. And it's really important to make sure we're planning to have profit. And I'll explain, I think, what I mean by that. But is that you've seen that, I'm sure, before, right? In running your practice, you know, you've had those months.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's to your point, the importance of planning, doing some projections, doing some estimates. So you can have a level of anticipation, which greatly reduces anxiety, right? Isn't anxiety really the result of, you know, uncertainty and maybe a level of powerlessness, right? So if you can put some certainty by having some prediction, because you're planning, you're forecasting, right? Looking ahead, and then you're organizing some routines, that puts someone in a pretty good stable condition to look at things objectively and then run their practice a little bit more objectively. Not saying that we have to be robots, but it does remove a lot of emotion when you start operating in that kind of space.
Yes. Now, you know, part of what I teach people to do is you have to treat your profit like an expense, right? And I think what we mean by that is not that it's like counted as an expense, you know, but, you know, when I say an expense, like, you know, you got to have payroll every 2 weeks, you know, you got to pay the landlord, you know, every month, and the money comes out of the account and it's treated like an expense, right? So I think the best way to ensure that you're going to have a profit is if you treat it like an expense, meaning that when you're doing your calculations for your make break number, you absolutely positively have to make sure that those, you know, your payment to yourself, the reserve account, the tax account, the business expansion account, those are all accounted for when you're coming up with your make break number, so to speak.
That's right.
And it's been my contention that a lot of practice owners underestimate how much they actually need to make to live the life they want to live, because they're not calculating that number correctly. You know, did you ever get in a situation like that where you're just like, oh my God, I'm not factoring in these other things that I really need?
That's right. Yeah. So that's why it's important to, you know, each month sort of calibrate that and recalibrate that, right? Because the practice is oscillates, right? It grows. Sometimes it contracts a little bit, then it grows again. So each month, looking at what that break-even number is, but factoring the break-even for having that profitability that you're trying to organize in. And it's interesting, because then we'll raise our urgency and we'll coordinate our actions to hit that. It's it, because it, that's the break even. That's what we need. It brings a level of necessity up, right? We need to pay our bills, right? And so if we start viewing that in that manner, it ensures that we're going to be creating, coming back to that word, creating some surplus that is a healthy way to run a practice and the business, right?
So you said two important things. Number one, you said you looked at it on a monthly basis. You almost recalculated it every single month.
Every month, know what the target is. Like, where do we need to be? I mean, we do it in our household to cover our bills, right? So that we don't overdraft from our bank in writing checks or whatever manner that we're paying our bills. So, you know, it's just applying a similar methodology to the practice.
Yes. And then you said, I think the most important thing was necessity. And, you know, to me, like, how much did that drive you? Like that when you got the target, this is the number, this is what we actually need to bring in to make this organization run, right?
Yeah.
Like how did that affect your, you know, cause you pump people up. I know that you're really good with your staff. You wanted them to win, you put them in the positions to win, but that came from you, right? How did you get everyone else to buy into that necessity?
Yeah, I think then that's the importance of prioritizing, you know, because many times as practice owners, we're juggling a lot of things at once and it can spread us thinly, right? And so messaging and our level of engagement with the team can sometimes, you know, be sort of spread too. So if we're a bit streamlined in our priorities, that it's a clearer way for the team to track and sort of get wrapped around. Right. And stay in that consistently, that we're championing certain priorities consistently from month to month, with some things just always being the priority. Right. It's just like in sports too. I mean, to win, you have to score, you have to put points on the board. Mm. You know, there's no winning if it still says zero, you know? So I always make analogies with private practice. I feel like it's a sport. I believe there's points. There's a scoreboard that we want to keep the whole group engaged, to have visibility, to know what the score is. And that's, you know, measured by KPIs and statistics. And if everyone's really on the same page about what are they, why are we measuring them, and what is it really supporting an overall purpose of, which hopefully is to champion great care, great service at a high quality level, enough that, you know, we have patients that are patients for life. They're so loyal, they'll come back if they need us. They're referring friends and family. They're speaking highly of us in the community. But to do that takes a level of prioritization. So, you know, coming back to that and realizing that, you know, let's keep the house in order with certain priorities all the time.
Yeah. Hey, what happened? Because I know, I mean, you had a huge organization, over 100 staff, you know, multi-locations. I know you had at some point in time, someone say to you, you're only in it for the money.
Yeah. And that burns when someone says that, because, you know, honestly, I think if you were to survey a bunch of practice owners, if we could figure out how to do this for nothing, we would.
Yeah.
You know, we don't go into this for the money. It's never about the money. But we do have a fiduciary responsibility of steering this ship and keeping it above water so it doesn't sink. We're trying to be there for our community and provide a phenomenal place for our team members to work at. To do that, we've got to keep the ship above water. If this is a bus, we got to keep the bus on the road. But yeah, you know, in those instances, you know, over time, your skin thickens a little bit. I mean, when we know who we are and what we're all about, I mean, if someone takes a shot at us like that, I'd say, you know, my viewpoint is there's something they don't understand. So let me take some time and first meet them where they're at. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I hear you. Where are you coming from with that? And then try to just get in a conversation and see if maybe there's something they don't understand that after I explain it, like, oh, I didn't realize that. It's like, okay, cool. So do you still feel that way? You know, or do you still look at me that way? And, you know, it's usually how it goes pretty good that way, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Did you ever have like a reservation about talking to staff about money and the profitability of the business and what was needed and all that? And did your viewpoint change over time, you know, about communicating with people about money?
Yes and yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's like, we don't want to have so much attention on money because it's not about money. Mm-hmm. And then it's also trying to play the balance. You know, they don't want to be on that side of the business. So it's balancing how much visibility or understanding do you bring them along with, but trying to organize, you know, the communication and the way things are organized in a manner that is more on their level. So if it's about volume and how many patients we serve, is trying to make sure the math all equates. So maybe you don't have to speak so much about particulars of the budget versus being able to talk about more like visits that we're budgeting at so that we can cover what we need to cover. Mm-hmm. And so, because that's the people we serve, the more that volume sits in the proper range suggests that we're properly serving and supporting our community with a high level service and that we're doing right by them.
Yeah.
If we're falling below that projection and that target, it would suggest maybe there's some things we're not doing or things that we could do better. Right.
Yeah.
And then, so it's coordinating all the activity on that.
Yeah. I love that.
All roads always coming back to, let's just take really great care of the people internally and externally. That's always the priority.
Has there been anything that has surprised you in working with other owners when it comes to their viewpoints on profit?
Yeah, I think there's a level of trust. I've been surprised at a reservation of wanting to trust people. And I'd say, you know, my two cents on that is, you know, trust everyone until they give you a reason not to. And mm-hmm. if you've been burned by someone in the past, don't hold it against everybody present and moving forward.
Yeah.
People are good. They want to help. You know, I see team members, they you know, generally desire to help forward the practice. There's a level of pride. There's a level of like vested interest. You know, they want to feel proud about the place they're working for. They have a voice that they want to share. They've got ideas. So keep organizing in a manner that welcomes all of that. So, you know, I've enjoyed, you know, personally and learning from other practice owners what you learn when you have that kind of open and very safe kind of environment with the team.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the greatest breakthroughs and talk about going to new levels and new heights comes from the group, you know, and then that just manages the energy of the practice too, among the group and for the owner or owners.
Did you ever have like a consideration? Because I think there's a myth that, hey, the bigger the organization gets, the lower the profit margins is going to be, right? And that to me is wholeheartedly untrue. I don't see why that would ever have to occur. But I've heard, and I know we've talked about this in the past. It's like, and because maybe you've gotten advice from, you know, other financial professionals, whoever that would be. But maybe talk a little bit about that, because there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to continue to have a healthy profit margin, regardless of the volume that you're doing or how big that you're getting.
I would agree. Yeah. And I'll acknowledge that idea is out there. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying at different inflection points in the growth of the practice that you don't see profitability kind of come down, but it's usually indicative of like there's some evolution, there's some adaptation, some changes that need to occur to then get back on the trajectory that you were on, that sort of level, that playing field, so to speak. If you are trying to play with that 10% profitability target, it's just making some tweaks. So, but it's not agreeing with that mindset, right? And because in doing so, it also you've decided to put a ceiling on the growth of your practice, which ultimately limits the impact you can have through the community. You know, you want to help more people with your great service and your great treatment approach. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
well, not only that, but I got to think that when you saw those moments where the profitability wasn't as high, you as an owner, that had to have a drag on you personally.
It does.
You know, and maybe talk a little bit about like the emotional aspect that has on someone when, because here you have this practice that you're putting all your life energy in, like you're just giving it 150%. And then you look at the exchange for that and it's 2%. And you're like, I can see why owners get burnt out. It's like, what am I doing this for?
I know. It's deflating, especially if you don't know why, right? Like it's good to know certain, like sometimes there's an asterisk next to certain months or quarters or a year. Like if you went and reinvested a ton in your practice, like that might have an impact at the end of the year, what that profitability looks like, or if you had some circumstances. You know, I know we had the Great Resignation a couple mm-hmm. of years ago. You know, I mean, when you look at historic and you benchmark across the country, that was the biggest turnover private practices experienced across the country. So if anyone's feeling like they were all alone during that storm, they weren't. Just like they weren't alone when many practices really, you know, in the early parts of the pandemic, saw their practices really kind of contracting a bit. But yeah, I mean, that's deflating. It's difficult to experience for sure. It's anxiety, it's stress, you know, but it's kind of comes with the job and the responsibility level.
What'd you do when you saw that?
I mean, it depends on the different inflection points and where I was seasonally, like throughout 20 years, right? Like maybe in the earlier years, I especially was panicking, you know, in the middle years started getting a little bit more able to keep a perspective about it. The later years sort of had plans built in, right? When we talk about that reserve fund and maybe a rainy day fund, had a line of credit, there was like a little bit more insulation, right? A lot more kind of points to sort of insulate the practice. So it's like, okay, don't like this right now, but I've prepared of moments when we're blitzed. If this is like, again, going back to sports, but so that we can get up, dust ourselves off, look around. Are you good? You good? Yeah, we're good. Okay, great. So let's reset. Let's get on with this. And move forward.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
You know, another thing that I want to go over, the importance of profit has to do with the value of the business as well. Because even though a lot of practice owners maybe not thinking about exiting, they're not thinking about transitioning, they're going to at some point in time. And that profit margin for, you know, good or bad, the reality is that most of these practices are going to be valued based upon the profit margin of the practice. And so I think it's just another reason that you really have to pay attention to it, because it is a reality when you go to sell.
That's right. You know, and at that moment you'll leverage someone that has a methodology for valuation. So it's a, you know, kind of calculated objectively, but you know, at the end of the day, there's usually a multiple assigned towards the profitability. And you know, a multiple of zero is zero. So if there's no profit, there's no, you know, you can multiply by zero and there's no value, right? So that makes that difficult. And that point, if there's any sort of transition plan or exit plan, that's going to make it sort of difficult to come up with a valuation where a buyer would see the value in wanting to pay for that. So
yeah, because if you can have a $9 million gross revenue practice that's doing, you know, let's say 5% profit margin, then I mean, what is that? That's 450,000 in profit. I mean, your multiple probably is not going to be very high on something with that much volume, with that low of a profit margin, unless there's other circumstances involved.
Right. Maybe there's some adjustments, something known as add backs, where maybe perhaps there's some expenses there that after said transition might add back in, which in turn increases the profitability. But you're right.
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
So let's talk about like when you get a client or when you see someone that you're working with. I mean, you look at the financials to start with, don't you? I mean, is that one of the first things that you do?
We want to make sure they're in good financial shape, because let's face it, the real fun stuff is delivering the care and service to the patients, clients, right, that we serve in our community. But it's distracting when we don't have the financial piece organized and stable. So it becomes something that kind of flip-flops our attention chronically or constantly, depending on what level of it's at. So, yep, that's something definitely we look at out the gates.
Let's say I got a $2 million practice and I'm doing a 5% margin right now. So that's under what the target would definitely be. Okay. Yep. What are you doing with that owner? Like, what are like the first three or four things that you're going to do to help confront not only the profit margin being low, but things that you can then do to get that number up you know, immediately.
Yeah. So the approach, I mean, initially first is just trying to get an understanding with the practice owner. Do they think it can do better? Right. Yeah. Because if they don't think it can do better, that out the gate. So I want to work on that a bit, because you can't, it's like trying to help patients. If they don't think they can get better, that's going to be really difficult to bring them along. Right. And collaborate and work together, have a partnership there. Right. So first it's getting that out of the way. Then, you know, it's looking at what are the current expenses, where's money being spent, and then taking a look at how they're trending with their productivity, their production. Mm-hmm. And trying to then drill that down a little bit. What are the expectations per full-time equivalent provider? Maybe having that even drilled down per hour, because some practices say, well, I have some part-timers, some full-timers. So there is what we call the full-time equivalent, right? But it's mm-hmm. breaking that down per hour. So we have a level of productivity per hour that we're targeting, and then cross-referencing, like, is that enough of a place to live that covers the expenses for this break-even that we're talking about? First is moving from their break-even is just paying their bills to our break-even is working it in to expect an 8 to 10% profit yes. margin so that we can earmark to properly support the practice, right? So so it's going there, and then it's taking a look at how the team's organized. Who's who? Who's doing what? Is that even clear, not only to the owner, but peer-to-peer, colleague to colleague? And then is there anything written up that supports that in the form of like an organizing chart, uh-huh. job descriptions? And then lastly, are there clear purpose statements for each of the positions, and a way to measure if said purpose is you know, meeting expectations, below expectations, or above expectations? So in the form of a statistic, a KPI, assigning a main one. And then that's usually the framework to get started with and kind of see where they at and what kind of separation is from that, and starting to work with them to kind of organize that and implement that in. And that begins to create a foundation we can work off of.
That's amazing.
To move in a more favorable condition.
Yeah. So here's what I heard. Number one is the willingness to want to, that you think you can get better. Number two, looking at the numbers and establishing a reality of what the practice actually needs to produce versus what it's producing right now. And the reality that you're probably underestimating how much you actually need to be doing. Yeah. And then number three is like figuring out where the disorganization is. Where's the chaos at that is not allowing this practice to produce what it needs to produce?
Yeah.
And that can come in many forms, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that word produce, it has to be consistent again with covering what we need to budget, mm-hmm. right? We need to get honest. Are we seeing enough, servicing enough patients and clients to support that budget, you know, as individuals and as a group? That's an important thing to balance and figure out a way to make that all work.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about money, you know, it is kind of one of those interesting things. If you don't assign a purpose for the money, it has the tendency to go everywhere. So I think good money management, making sure that you account for all these things. I mean, I know you looked at staff pay, you looked at, you know, some of your overhead costs. Like, how did you break that down when you were running the organization? Like, this is the target I want for this. This is the target I want for this. Like, did you have that laid out pretty well?
Yeah, that was something that I would routinely massage through the years. That got a little bit more sophisticated as the years went on.
Yep.
You know, the main expense line is that salary wages. I mean, that's what, you know, if we're going to prioritize, that's where the eyeballs want to go mm-hmm. each month, and managing that as it compares to the top line, right? The revenue. And of course, there's variability state to state and certainly industry to industry, but a healthy place to live is somewhere around that 55%. You know, if we're going to generalize, I mean, that's yep. give or take. I see some practices hanging around 50. I mean, that's incredible if they can do 50 to 52%.
Yes.
But I see some, I mean, they're just because of the constraints they have in their state, it's creeping around that 58%. But, you know, whatever you can do on that line to manage it does make managing the overall budget a lot more doable, a lot more digestible. And then you work your way out. What are usually the next highest expenses? Usually it's employee benefits. Yep. Somewhere lives in there. And then lastly is your rents, right? So managing the rent slash CAM slash if it's triple net, whatever it is to, for your space expense or expenses if you have multiple locations. And so I've got some ideas on how to organize that and have some targets within the target, you know, and from square footage and what to expect from productivity with square footage to cost per full-time equivalent. I mean, there's a lot of ways to break it down so you kind of know where to live, where to sit.
Yeah.
And so I just sit down with practice owners and we work it out with something custom for them.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure there's always going to be things you can do to try to get their average transaction up. There's going to be things that you can do to, you know, make the experience more efficient without giving up on the care part as well, which I think is totally doable. And that'll all help the bottom line as well. And, you know, you know, 1% matters in a practice that's doing a huge amount of money. And I think that a lot of people neglect certain areas, and just a 1% difference in a certain one of those categories can make a huge difference on the overall profit margin.
I'm with you. And I'm glad you're saying that. I was just having this conversation not long ago, but yeah, 1% is like 1 degree. That's the difference of getting water boiling or not. And also being a basketball enthusiast. I mean, that's the difference of maybe winning a game or not is a game winning shot. So, you know, 1% more is still one more, and it can have big impact. It can have big outcomes. So yeah, every percent counts for sure.
Man, that is that's a great analogy right there, isn't it? I love that. Anything else about profit? I think that we haven't covered yet. I just, you know, to me, it's like one of these areas that so many practice owners tend to like just think, well, you know, it's. I hope it's there. And, you know, I think the big takeaway is that you definitely have to plan for it. You have to make sure. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. And this doesn't have to do too much with profit though, but in looking at your organization as an investment asset, right? Because, you know, this was something that was very personal to you, but it also was an investment. Your practice, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk a lot about the biggest expense that most practice owners have is money that they had the opportunity to make and they didn't for whatever reason. Maybe it was lack of organization or, you know, not good marketing or whatever it was. But when you looked at your organization, were you always looking at, okay, I have this much space. I need to get this thing up to capacity. Like, was that a driving force for you, like to maximize whatever locations that you were? It's like, I need to build these things up to a certain level. I mean, did you think about that much?
Yeah. I mean, usually it was the growth that presented the attention and the opportunity to look at like whether we need to expand space or add space. And then with any sort of expansion, whether you're adding space or opening new space, the idea is, again, what do we need to do to get to that break even? Because once you're at that, mm-hmm. like you can settle into the game, you know, that's where that necessity is. That's the priority. We have to cover the expense of this so that we can sustain this and that it's not a liability on the entire practice. It just draws attention from what we really want to be doing. So, so that would organize a bit of the priorities, for sure at times, through the years, you know, and, you know, but figured a lot of things out along the way. And I think that's what fuels my passion. Now, I just want to help practice owners across the country. I love private practice. I love it. And I just want to see everybody, you know, thrive in it. I see what it does for society. I think there's still more good we can do. I think this world is just hungry for more good. So I'm just out there wanting to help people any way I can to find a way of organizing and creating, you know, successful rhythms and routines. Because that's really how this all comes together, is finding a systematic way of just holding this all together and going through these kind of things that we're talking about today.
Now, that being said, and you've heard the dark side of all this stuff, and I hear it too. When I say the dark side, I'm talking about the practice owners that don't have a really positive viewpoint on the industry, right? They don't have a positive viewpoint that they think they're getting squeezed, their reimbursements are getting low. Staff is hard to find. It's more expensive than ever to try to hire people. I mean, you heard all this stuff before. I know you have, yeah. Right?
And they're real challenges.
And yeah. These are 100% real challenges. So talk me through this. We're talking with some, imagine people are listening to this are like, that's me. I don't have a very positive viewpoint on the future of my industry. It's getting, to a point where I think just the corporates are going to take over everything. How do you navigate that?
Wow. Yeah.
We have to come up with a solution right now, but
so let's solve world problems. Here we go, Eric. Yeah. Times are always a changing, right? So yes. We're in a state of evolution right now. There's no question about it. So, it's an invitation to take a look at how we approach some things and see like, what could we update? We don't have to use the word change because sometimes it signals the sympathetic nervous system to start scanning for danger and it puts us in a kind of fear, like, oh, there's something fearful around the corner in front of us. But certainly like the idea of where can we update? Where can we make some tweaks, some adjustments to the way we've been approaching our game? Where are the opportunities? Because if you look at all the industries, these updates and adaptations are happening all around us. You can't go to a pharmacy, a supermarket, the airport without engaging with kiosks now and self-checkout. And there's a level of evolution happening in front of us. We have now are in a global economy bigger than ever. So what we're able to do with technology, what we're able to do to access support overseas, the game has broadened. That's provides more resources to running our practices today or business today. So, it's the willingness to go learn, to keep staying engaged, to keep challenging the status quo, or else it gets kind of insane, right? You keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you're getting. So sometimes it's like, where could I maybe do a little bit differently? Where could I maybe, engage some people that have some different eyeballs and ideas that maybe I could, start thinking with that, again, start challenging some of the ways we've always done things sort of mindset.
Yep.
That can sometimes get in the way at a time like this, but it couldn't be a more better time than ever though, to start to implement updates and adjustments because society's very used to it and accommodated to it right now. Like I said, just going into the supermarket, you see people of all ages, kind of comfortably checking themselves out, running their groceries through, people of all ages. Airport, the same thing as they engage that kiosk and print their boarding pass. I mean, by the masses, they're doing it pretty seamlessly and figuring it out. So there's opportunities and where it's going to be embraced. We don't have to be worried that our patients aren't going to be happy with us if we start making some adjustments.
And that being said, of all the practices that you've consulted, that you've seen, has there been one where you're just like, I'll say it a different way, is that when you go in there, you see that the majority of the condition that they're in are things that they have control over, right? Meaning that they can produce an effect of change that will have a meaningful impact on their practice. It's not just the insurance companies or the inflation or whatever it is. There's like things that you can do.
Yes.
That will have a meaningful impact in your profit margins.
I would agree. Yes. Okay. And I didn't even touch on, there's also technology is better than ever at our fingertips. I didn't really get too on that, but there's a lot going on with how more robust technology is, not only inside our EMR, but what we can do with an internet signal. It's pretty remarkable, VoIP phones, and there's just so much going on that we can elevate processes and systems. But you're right, it's controlling the controllables, definitely not to dismiss or diminish some of these challenges that practice owners are experiencing.
Yeah.
But again, trying to look at the controllables, what can I do to leverage what I have control of? And it could be just enough to move the needle and keep moving forward, keep growing, keep thriving.
Yeah. Like you said, it doesn't take much. Just a couple of changes can change the degrees. And that could mean all the difference between, you know, a 5% profit margin and a 15% profit margin.
That's right.
You know, that would satisfy a lot of your personal financial issues. That would give you, you know, a lot more in reserves or, you know, whatever it would be. And it would also increase the value of your practice quite a bit. Going from a 5% profit margin to a 15% profit margin with things that you have absolutely control over, I think that should get people excited. Like, I can do this, you know?
Yes.
So I can totally do this.
You know, another thing, Eric, too, it's I think also when we come back to perspective, it's remember we're playing the long game. So a lot of times when we're making tweaks, adjustments, updates, et cetera, play the long game. But we're trying to find a cadence where this is an endurance sport as a private practice owner. Try to limit how many sprints you're doing because you scurry and you try to get something going where you're trying to move the needle fast. It's exhausting to keep operating at that speed. So, you know, there are times where we have to sprint, but trying to make our MO more about like the endurance game, finding an even pace, engaging the group, and keep organizing and reorganizing as you go along. So there's a way of doing things and an approach to doing things that serves and supports the practice owner rather than, you know, deplete the life out of a practice owner, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's not, these things don't have to be done overnight, you know, right. So as not to overwhelm a practice owner, but there are, you got to know when to sprint and when you're going to be the tortoise, and some things do take a little bit longer and it's okay. And, I think if you understand that and work with people that like kind of have been then down that road, that would be super helpful for someone.
Yep. I agree.
So how can people connect with you, Mike?
A few ways to connect with me. Probably the easiest way is just go to NulaTrainingSystems.com and there's a contact page. Happy to schedule a discovery call and just have a casual conversation and see how we might be able to be a match and work together. But I'm also just available too. I love sharing and just making sure people are doing well out there. So they can also email me at mnula@nulatrainingsystems.com.
I love it. Okay, buddy. Well, until the next time, I'm sure we'll be talking soon, but thanks for coming on and tackling a difficult subject for a lot of practice owners. So glad you were on. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Eric. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. We'll see you on the next podcast. Be well.